Excellent.
Haha.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Actually Comics for June 12th, 2019. I'm Tristan.
I'm Bob.
And what's out? Comic books.
So many.
Yeah.
Always so many.
For a switch up, we get them comics.
The crushing weight of new comics.
Yeah. What do you got there?
I have Event Leviathan number one.
Ooh, good choice.
Brian Bendis and Alex Maleev, and it's great. It's a mystery about some entity named Leviathan, who is taking out all of the DC Comics universe clandestine spy organizations and terrorist organizations and whatever they are. I guess maybe, I don't know. Yeah, because are they? I don't know. It's Spiral, Argus, DEO, Cobra, and Task Force X.
Yeah.
Of the Suicide Squad fame.
Yep.
But it's basically like Batman, Lois Lane, a little bit of Green Arrow mixed in there, and they are investigating like what the F is going down, and it's really great.
Yeah.
I've been looking forward to this. The lead-in issue that came out a couple weeks ago was awesome. This one is more focused and cheaper, which is even greater, because that one was great, even with being multiple stories.
Absolutely, you know, this is love story. Green Arrow in this.
It calls Batman a nerd.
This was my favorite. I have disliked the direction they've been going with Green Arrow for so long. I always loved the character. I loved him as like a firebrand liberal crazy person, like to the point where he's ridiculous, to the point where he sometimes is just like over the top and like like completely sabotages himself. Also is kind of an idiot and kind of loses and fails at everything.
Yeah.
But is also just a loudmouth jerk to people too.
Yeah.
And you know, when he just Batman starts explaining something, he's like, "Shh, nerd."
Shush, nerd. it was really great. Bendis is like really just killing it on the characterizations, and also in terms of Green Arrow, I thought his characterization in that really weird Green Lantern issue that came out last week,
yeah,
it's also spot on. I'd love to think that DC is kind of like figuring out to have one voice. I'm not sure, but you know, at the same point, you can choose which comics you buy, and if one doesn't have a voice that you like, you can just not buy it. And that's where my aim is pointed. And it is Event Leviathan is great.
Yep, it is that just, book.
It's a little talky, you know, but it's I'd rather have a talky book at this point. That's,
but it's
like
great
cohesive.
Talky.
Yeah, they have great like the personalities are ring true to like what the characters you imagine the characters to be, you know, and I would rather have something that's like a mystery and a conversation than something that's just like some kind of crazy bam 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 constant action.
Agreed.
You know, I mean, that said, both can work. One of my top books.
So I'm just going to quickly mention that Ahoy Comics Bronze Age Boogie number 3 is out.
Fun.
Continues to be such a fun book. There's some sad stuff going on with this poor bear. Oh my God.
The bear story was rough. That's the backup
story.
The
bear story is really rough.
Yeah.
The Ursa Major part 3 is like shit goes down and they're mistreating this damn bear and you get real mad.
I would like to point out with Bronze Age Boogie that one of the best things about it is that it is drawn by Alberto Ponticelli, who drew the Frankenstein Agent of Shade series.
Yeah.
So I really like his art a lot, and I think he's great. It's written by Stuart Moore, who was Vertigo editor and turned pro writer, and I think it's other just the talent on these Ahoy comics books.
And also Ursa Major with Tyrone Finch and Morissette
from Elephant Man.
Yes, from Elephant Man.
Elephant Man.
It's Morissette from Elephant Man. I loved that first run of Elephant Man.
Yeah.
Nobody picks it up. It is like it is like lost to time as far as people who come to my shop are concerned. I've had probably the same trade sitting there for maybe the last 2 years.
No, I feel like I need to buy it, but that
it's
Swamp
really
Comics
good.
Thing is calling my name.
Oh my
as well.
God, that's so exciting.
We'll talk about that a little later.
I'm going to talk about Venom.
Oh yeah, talk about it. I read it.
Venom.
Cool.
Venom still has the crazy
War of the Realms.
Yes,
tie-in.
It is. What's the word I'm looking for? Norse.
Yes.
Asgardian. That's the word I was looking for.
Guardian.
He has the weird Asgardian enchantment. He has his own weird little axe thing. This is a fun book. I mean, it's great.
It doesn't lose track of the Venom storyline.
Yeah.
In that it is, they've been clever in how they've incorporated this.
That's the nail on the head.
And it's cool because if you don't follow War of the Realms and you do follow Venom, it's not a total derail, which is nice.
I don't know that I've really ever seen that before, where they manage to incorporate the story arc
that's
going on in a story. Yeah,
every once in a while.
This was really, really good about that.
Yeah, they did.
Loved it. Good
job. What's next?
We can talk about Superman. I think I read it.
Yeah, Superman number 12. This is kind of a big one in terms of the overall Superman storyline, which is somehow separate from the Action Comics, which is really the event Leviathan and Leviathan storyline. This is like a space epic with the whole Superman and his kid and Supergirl and the Crypto the dog and General Zod and Jor-El and all the whole Krypton and that
space rock fighting man.
Space rock fighting man is they lean hard on Space Rock Fighting Man.
Well, they're doing is like Action Comics is their Daily Planet character Superman, and Superman is their big punching space epic. So
yes.
So if you like one version of Superman more than the other, you can go to either of these two things. If your world is down to earth with the family and with his friends and all these things that he does in his life, action is your book. Yeah. And if you like big space crap with Zod and like all this shit and people punching and throwing planets at each other, that's this one.
So it's like kind of, to me, it's like Action Comic is like the Fleischer cartoons versus Superman being like the movie Man of Steel.
Yeah. I feel like it's less like the movie Man of Steel and more like something that I liked better.
In that it's Superman punching things that are really big.
Lots of big punching.
Lots of big punching.
big punching.
Yes.
Speaking of big punching, there's some big punching in this new series of The Ride, Burning Desire. This is the third installment in the Ride series. It's been going on for 15 years, I believe.
What? Really?
I think the first one came out 15 years ago.
Jeezum crowbars.
Yeah, it was done as sort of a like a down-to-earth version of Flight, I think, where it's kind of like a bunch of different creators would get a chance to do a bunch of different stories. But this thing is its own thing and seems to be an ongoing story or two ongoing stories that tie together.
Yes.
Man, it's good.
Cool.
It's
I didn't understand it, which isn't to say it's not good. I just didn't.
It's like very criminally. It's very like it has that like noir kind of thing to it. It's like ultra violent, sleazy weirdness. And maybe there's a haunted car. I really hope that's the plan with the end. It feels like that's kind of where they're going.
Nice.
So I think that there's either a cursed or haunted car going on. You know, strip clubs. Adam Hughes draws 12 pages of a backup story.
Saucy action.
Yes. Of a saucy, ultra violent revenge story.
Yeah. And it also, like,
with
for
a furry.
Some reason, a lot of the people are dressed in this plush costume.
Yes.
I would also say, like, maybe I brought a little bit too much of what I thought it was and should have just kind of, like, relaxed and been like, okay, like, this is, and just, like, looked at it as its own thing.
Yeah.
Again, not to say it's bad. It was hard for me to access it.
Yeah, I dug it. I felt it was pretty straightforward for me. But,
cool.
I'm into it. Oh, yeah, please.
So my favorite new Image series, number 2, came out. It's called Go-Gore. By Ken Garing. It is, I believe, all done by one guy. Yeah, created, written, drawn, colored, lettered by Ken Garing. And it is kind of a fantasy world of like just this kind of strange fantasy world. And then this guy has kind of like a golem-y kind of companion that they are. It's just crazy, but the art is so good. It's so just beautifully executed. I love it. Everything from the pacing of the story to the page layouts to the art style and the writing. It's just it's great. And then apparently one of the guys has a tool called a multi-staff, and the last two pages are how to build a multi-staff, which is kind of neat in itself. It's like a schematic. I just really like Gogor. It looks like in the next issue he's going to fight a lizard man.
I do like lizard man. So it's
kind of just like a swamp thing meets maybe like a hobbity kind of thing meets kind of like a flying planetoids kind of thing. I don't know. It's neat. I like it.
Plus, there's the swamp squatch. What the hell?
What was yeah. What was that thing called?
What was the swamp squatch?
It was called something squatch. Hold on. I'll find it.
Okay. So I'm going to talk about, while he's looking for swamp squatch, I'm going to talk about Sonata number one from Image Comics. This is by, there's art by Brian Haberlin.
Beautiful. It's a very beautiful book.
Beautiful book. Story by David Hein and Brian Haberlin. It's
David Hein's books are usually real weird, and this one was a little bit more down to earth than what I because he did. What was that one that was like super strange that he did?
I don't know.
Can't remember. He had this really weird, like out there book that I liked the art on it, but I couldn't end up it was just really hard to follow. Anyway, this is not that. This is easy
book
to follow.
Is it is pretty easy to follow, but it is also very high fantasy, which may throw some people. It's a lot of steampunky, like big stuff. Like, I don't even know what to say. Like political geography, lots of complex world building. It may knock some people out. But if your sensibility falls into it, it honestly feels like somebody took Moebius, so like one of his like big stories, and just kind of took it and did ultra detailed renderings of it in some digital format. And it's fascinating. It's just, it is big. So if that's your thing, you're going to love it. It's like Dune and steampunk and like all those sorts of things.
It's two.
If you like Dune, you're probably going to dig this.
So it's these people, they live on a planet and every 5 years, this planet gets really close to another planet, and it's close enough that these people who control these bird creatures or train these bird creatures to fly on them like flying horses, essentially, can like kind of balloon over to the other planet, and then they're like colonizing it. So it's like a little it felt a very like steampunk Game of Thrones kind of thing. And it was cool. It looks great.
Yeah.
I still can't find the name of this thing. It's driving me insane.
It has Moss and Sasquatch in it.
What is it? It is, but I can't find it.
All right.
Anyway, and while you keep going.
I'm going to keep going.
Keep going.
In fact, I'm going to talk about Amazing Spider-Man 23.
Good.
They have continued the Hunted story into an epilogue where we find out, so we've buried Kraven. He is totes dead. And his son has a little flip out, totally illustrated by Rotley. So good. Love Ryan Otley's artwork, and I love what he's doing in here. I just, I don't know, man. I loved Invincible, so it continues over to my love of him on Spider-Man. And this is crazy. It's a fun little journey. You get a little bit of background, and you get a little bit of what's going to happen, what's going to continue on. I can't. Everything that I want to say about it is a spoiler to what happens here. But you get some new stuff happening. How about that? There's a character that I love who shows up who I haven't seen in a Spider-Man comic in forever.
In the Amazing Spider-Man?
Yeah, like literally the last page.
Which? Oh yeah, that guy.
That guy.
There's an appearance of that guy.
Everybody loves that guy. And also, I mean, of course, Friendly Neighborhood. I can't say enough awesome things about this book. It's so hard to sell this for some reason. I do not know why.
You sold out of that last one.
I did, actually.
I was trying to find it, and it was just
so
instantly gone.
Because it had a first appearance.
Yeah, but it was apparently
it was
like it was
not
this
a
great
first appearance.
Yeah, but it was supposed to be really good.
It was great.
That's why I was looking for it.
It was a throwback to the kid who collected Spider-Man.
Yeah, and see, that was like, I loved that comic.
It was so good.
That
was
such a heartwarming.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and this was such a wonderful little tribute to it as well.
Aw.
So, yep. Enjoyed it.
Okay. I am giving up.
You have to give up.
Like, I can't read it. And, I mean, I don't know why I found it. It's anyway, it's called Something Squatch and it's in Gobor. If you can find it, you'll win a prize, perhaps. I don't know. Umbrella Academy. What is Hotel Oblivion? Number 7 is out. This is the final. So this is the longest Umbrella Academy series to date, as far as I know. I think the rest of them were all 5 issues. Or 6, perhaps. This one's longer. It's the final chapter of this. So if you're following it, you'll be psyched. And if you're not following or waiting for the trade, you'll also be psyched. It's good.
And it's if you're not reading Wonder Twins...
It also
Twins,
ends on a cliffhanger.
Guys, why aren't you reading Wonder Twins?
It's so good. I actually... I kind of flipped this. I try not to read it because I just love it so much. Wonder Twins. Mark Russell. He's so good.
It's all about the Annoyance League.
Yeah, the League of Annoyance. And it's like the Scrambler with the egg costume and his daughter, who is Jaina's friend from school.
Yep.
And her name is literally Polly Math.
Yes.
And she's really good at math.
Yep, and the Scrambler does a magic trick in the beginning where everyone's having fun, and there's a swordfish and a lady, and he manages to jam them both together to both of their dismay.
Yes, they're
Pretty beautiful. I don't know, man. I don't know. If you don't like fun comics, don't read this.
But also, like, really touching, like, one of the, I don't know, I think it was the last issue, was just, like, the one with the origin of Gleek.
Oh, the Gleek
just,
one killed me.
Oh, you know, like, it's just so good. It's, like, the writing, it's funny, and it feels, I also like it because it doesn't feel, like, just weighted down by, like, everything's so dark, everything's so, like, just brutal. It's just, like, this world where there's superheroes and things are fun, but they can still be sad, and they can still be touching, and like they can still have emotional gravity, so it's really cool. And that is also part of the Wonder Comics imprint, which is Bendis's DC imprint, and I just can't say good things about his DC stuff.
Yeah,
what are we looking at now?
I was looking at X-Force. Ooh, which is this issue is so much better than the stuff that I had been reading before.
I think X-Force,
I feel like it keeps getting better.
Yeah, and unfortunately there's only one more issue.
Yeah,
but
that's so too bad.
I would say X-Force is actually probably, at this point, I think, the best X book.
It's definitely one of them. I mean, love Uncanny.
Yeah, I did love it until the art got really bad, and then I'm just kind of like, it's just so distracting. But the story is good.
This has some interesting stuff that's probably going to continue to be canon about Ascani, which is kind
of
cool.
Yeah, I feel like none of it is going to be canon. I feel like all of it is, either all of it is going to be, or it's
right,
just
or
like
none
it'll
of it,
never
it's
be
gonna
referred
disappear.
To again.
All I know is that this kind of explains some sort of interesting connection between the Phoenix Force and the Ascani, and it's kind of a thing that I was like actually interested in.
It was good, and the art from Dylan Burnett was really good. It's written by Ed Brisson,
and there's all sorts of like fake aliens biomechanical shit in the ship that they're in, and it's fun.
Yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, it was. I enjoyed it.
Superior Spider-Man War of Realms.
That has the West Coast Avengers in it, and including the Shark Baby on the cover.
Yep.
It's although I don't think the Shark Baby is in the comic itself.
Shark Baby, Shark Baby, Baby, Shark, Shark.
I was so sad to realize last week that West Coast Avengers has been canceled.
It is unbelievably sad.
It's nice to know they're all still a team, and to see them in action with the Superior Spider-Man as part of the overarching War of the Realms crossover event.
Mm-hmm.
That Darth Vader comic was pretty good.
Dark Visions.
Yeah, I think this series has been very good. If you're a trade waiter, the Darth Vader Dark Visions trade will probably be very good. They are really doubling down on Darth Vader's like super villainy, which is kind of cool. That like if you really kind of think about the Star Wars movies, you know, it's more like they tell you he's bad than he actually does anything that's really that bad.
Yeah.
This is like, it to the extent that it's like when you read these comics, it's just like, whoa, like he's what? Oh my God. He's like, in this one, it really focuses on the psychological horror of Darth Vader. The cover is really cool. It's kind of this like kaleidoscope, trippy kaleidoscope cover with Darth Vader, but instead he's got a skull face.
Yep. And speaking of dark, sinister books, Totally. Jughead's Time Police, number one.
I totally liked Jughead's Time Police. I really did.
I also enjoyed Jughead's Time Police, and I don't know why.
Well, okay, I'll tell you one reason. I have some thoughts on as to why part of it. So it's drawn by Derek Charm, who also draws Squirrel Girl, of which there is an issue out this week we will talk about soon. It's part of this Archie Forever thing, so it's actually somehow, I guess, connected to the actual main Archie series, but it doesn't feel that way. It's basically somehow in this comic, Jughead gets really sad about something, and his solution to it is to hook up with this techno person who may be Dylan. Is that Dylan, the science guy?
Yes.
Dilbert? Dylan. I can't remember.
I can't remember either. Yeah, whatever.
I thought it was Dylan. But anyway... and Hot Dog and Archie or whatever, they build a time machine, and Jughead starts going through time, and
because
it goes,
he ruined a pie,
because he ruined it, he made people sick with a pie he made,
with he poisoned them with fish,
literally. But it's I think Jughead's Time Police was really fun. It was super lighthearted. It didn't feel like Riverdale-y. It felt just like kind of like more. Narrative driven than your typical Archie comic, but less like serious and trying to be like all blah blah blah.
If you feel like you need to read an Archie comic that's just fun and feels kind of like a well written throwback to the 60s version, that's probably it.
Yeah, and this the art's really great, and it was fun. Which is nice, which is weird to say, is a nice change of pace from your typical Archie comic.
Also, Archie and Friends Beach Party.
Oh, yeah.
It's another one of these, like, made as though it were the 60s kind of Archie books.
It is a Dan Parent book, through and through, with short stories that are all beach-themed. Although the inking, he has an inker, so I normally do not like this guy's art at all, although he is a classic artist for Archie these days. Anyway, Archie and Friends Beach Party is a new series, and Archie is kind of going back to be like, well, you know, we don't have a series with new content
that is
congruous with like what we have traditionally for 80 plus years published, or however long it's been around.
Yep. Archie and Sabrina is also out.
Yeah, and this is actually Archie Forever, Archie number 705.
Yep.
So it looks like it's a brand new miniseries number one. It even has a number one on it, but it is Archie number 705. And Archie and Sabrina are a couple, and this is the Riverdale... And it's written by the same guy who writes Amazing Spider-Man.
Yes.
And it's like the Riverdale one. It's got a lot of all the stuff. If you like the Riverdale show, you're going to want Archie and Sabrina.
But it's also lower impact than that.
It's
a little... It's a little teenier than that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And speaking of things that are a little teenier, Marvel Action from IDW, Marvel Action Spider-Man number 5.
Liked it.
Yeah, as did I. I continue to enjoy all of these titles in a way that I am shocked that I do. It's just fun. It's just fun Spider-Man stuff.
Yeah. It's cool because it's like, so it's a Spider-Man book, but it's a Spider-Verse book. Because it's Peter Parker and Miles and Gwen, Spider-Gwen, and they all go to the same school, and they are all spider-powered. I don't understand how it works. I don't care. It's fun.
Does not matter. And that's part of what's good about it, is that it doesn't... There's nobody going for no prizes in this. No one gives a shit. They're just like, just do it. Just have fun.
Why not? Just like, this is what people who saw Spider-Verse are familiar with now, and they like these characters, so let's put them in a book that's all ages, and there it is. Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 45 is out. It's a War of the Realms tie-in, but it's intelligent and not... It's another one that you don't have to have read the crossover in order to think is cool.
Yeah. So Batman and the Outsiders number 2
has neither Batman nor the Outsiders.
It has gone off the rails.
They blew it with this series like literally immediately. I'm not to say anything terrible.
I actually thought it was a fine issue.
There literally is no Batman there is no Batman and no Outsiders in this comic.
Is Black Lightning an outsider?
Yes, it is.
Then there is some of him.
Oh. Well, barely.
He's mostly being choked for the majority of the story. Yeah,
there's this guy that's clearly just supposed to be Cable, but he's not.
Yeah.
He's pretending to be from the future, and I don't, whatever. I think for, like, I should be excited about this comic.
It got real complicated and real, like, too much instantly.
Like, immediately. And,
they did not take a lot of time to overcomplicate this.
I was enough of a fan of the original series that I actually at one point referred to it as Batto. As we did in the 80s.
Oh, did we?
It was Batto.
Not I, but...
Yeah, Teen Titans. Like,
no,
that
nice.
Was how it was, like, when they had the crossover with Batto.
Batto. Old Batto.
Yeah, anyway.
The Batman Who Laughs, number 6.
The Batto Who Laughs.
Continues to be a book that people buy.
Man, yeah, and that's cool. I don't understand the stakes of this 7-issue miniseries, because the whole premise is Batman being infected by the Batman who has the laughter, and you know he's not going to become that character. So I don't understand why you'd want a 7-issue series of him becoming not that character, but... people do. Catwoman is out, number 12. It has
sure
a really
that isn't him.
It isn't. It's the real Batman. Oh. Then there's a Batman with guns, and then there's a Batman Who Laughs. And the Batman Who Laughs has infected the Batman regular with his Joker snot, and that has made him fight and become. But he is battling against it, and blah 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 blah. Catwoman is also out, number 12.
Yeah.
This continues to be good, and I thought the variant cover of this was really
ridiculously
strange.
Cool, though,
and I love it. Yeah, I love this variant cover. It's
such a throwback. Like
I'm trying to figure out. It's a reference to something that I don't understand. I don't know what the original reference is. But it might possibly be a reference to many things, or at least two things. It's a very classically styled rendered painting of Catwoman in her classic Silver Age costume. And then there is a very cartoon styled Batman and Robin hand reaching in to pull the cover of a Silver Age Batman comic, or a Golden Age Batman comic based on the logo. They're pulling it away from this classically rendered Catwoman.
Yeah, I don't recognize it as a direct reference, but I think it's great.
It is great. It's great. If I were a variant cover collector, this would be one that I would be like, that's cool.
Yeah.
I like it.
I think it's amazing.
I like it.
Okay, I did not read this. Conan, yeah. Age of Belit.
Belit.
It's dug it up until now, so
it's good.
Sure
the artist did like layouts for like a part of it, so it's got a little bit of inconsistent art, but it's cool. Should we talk about this?
Or
should
we not? Hell yeah!
Okay, Silver. This is a book of the week. I think this is Marvel's book of the week.
Absolutely.
It is called Silver Surfer Black, and it is by Donny Cates and Trad Moore, and it is trippy as hell. But it also is very narratively important to the current Guardians of the Galaxy storyline.
Yes, and Infinity as well, like the big crossover.
Yeah, because in that thing, they shot them all into a black hole, but then this explains how they didn't stay in a black hole, but also some other stuff, and then there's just this really trippy Silver Surfer adventure.
Yeah, it's also a tie-in to Asgardians of the Galaxy.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit.
Because it's got Beta Ray Bill.
Well, but he's on the Guardians of the Galaxy
So
it's like how he didn't... I guess it's like a little bit of a spoiler in that Beta Ray Bill was shot into the... and also Cosmic Ghost Rider. They are shot into the black hole with the Silver Surfer, but they are also not in there. And the reason why is because... the Silver Surfer sacrificed his own well-being in order to shoot them out. But then there are other things that happen as well, so that I won't spoiler. But the art is super trippy. It's just like a super like cool excuse for Trad Moore to just go bonkers with anything. Like, you know, just characters melting into liquid, characters stretching into bizarre, convoluted poses. And it all makes sense because he's in a black hole, you know? It's like that last 25 minutes of 2001 where it's just like, you know, it's just like kind of,
but also
crazy.
The stuff that's grounded, I thought was great as well. I mean, it's no weirder than Kirby,
no,
but it's its own thing in a way that it's just, I still stand behind my Treadmore as the new Kirby.
Yeah, like, I mean, you could make that case very easily, especially
I really feel like a lot of the people that are like, that want to do what Kirby did look like him. They're just aping him exactly.
Yes.
And Treadmore is doing this thing that is its own version. It's its own world, but it's so him. And it so expresses these cosmic ideas that you can't express.
Yeah.
So characters like Silver Surfer, if you're trying to explain what's happening in another dimension where, you know, people are fruit or whatever, and it's like just shit's up is down and left is right. You know, it's like, if you want to do that, you have to have someone who has this insane style, and, like, and he's got it.
Like Gonzo imagination, for sure.
And the colorist keeps up, which blows my mind.
Oh, even just this cover illustration is so much more complicated than I thought. Like, but like beautifully simple at the same. Like, so it's like his hand and like this whole thing that's like happening with like the energy within him, and like just really, really cool. Also, I will just sing the praises of Donny Cates in this.
Yeah, as well.
A lot of the more recent appearances of the Surfer have him just kind of. I mean, he was in Squirrel Girl, I think, at one point, which worked.
Yes.
Or maybe it was Moon Girl. Somewhere I read him where he was okay, but like,
I think it was Squirrel Girl.
Recently, like in fairly recent continuity, they've had him just like running around with Galactus again, and I'm just like, that's not like the Silver Surfer doesn't do planets for Galactus anymore. Like, he retired from that. And it cost him a great deal, and that's like kind of like the pathos of the Silver Surfer character.
Right.
And I feel like Donny Cates' story really pays tribute to like the history of the character and the actual genesis of the character and who Norrin Rad, the Silver Surfer, is. So it was really great, even though not a ton of stuff happened other than just like this transition of the Silver Surfer into this other dimension. And then some stuff happens.
Crazy mystery at the end about this thing, and it's a character that you know from Donny Cates' other stuff. And
See, now I didn't read that, so I didn't know.
So if you've been reading, well, it's a spoiler to say if you've been reading. So
Who that is. Yeah, okay. All right, cool. Yeah, I didn't pick up on it, but I
guess
do now.
Even if I say if you've been reading, that's gonna
no, not it, necessarily.
So, but yeah.
If we leave it there, I think.
Yeah, let's just say if you've been reading Donny Cates, you are.
There's a payoff,
and it's interesting, and there's also a payoff to a big Thor story as well. So. Yes. Very awesome.
Yes, and Guardians of the Galaxy and all that other stuff.
Yeah, awesome. Champions.
Champions.
Champions continues to be a book that is great and sells terribly for me. I mean, Zub, I love him. He's always been, he's been one of those guys that can kind of write almost anything.
Yeah.
And I will be entertained by it.
Nice. I flipped through it. It was a decent superhero comic.
Yeah, it's just a fun book. It's low impact, I feel like. I feel like it's like, it's almost like Young Justice for Marvel is really how it feels to me. And I wish more people were on board. The people who buy it regularly, they're obsessed with it and can't wait for the next one to come out. And it's like, they're more into it than anybody else is into the books that they're reading, but it doesn't have a wide stretch. I don't know.
Yeah.
Marketing wise, people don't seem to be getting on board.
Well, it doesn't really have like the biggest marquee character in it is Miles Morales.
Yeah.
So maybe people just aren't seeing something that they recognize, right off the bat. But they should take a chance. If you're looking for a superhero book, it's solid.
Yeah. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark,
right.
Number 6. Still silly, still way better art than it deserves to be for an Elvira book. Like, there's just fun stuff.
Yeah.
But I don't know how this book is readable, but it is.
It is. I was into how strong it was. We should probably, before we
Christ.
Get too much further along, mention that Immortal Hulk number 19 is out and is completely insane in a way that this series has been insane from the get-go.
But
and
it
this
still
one is
manages
like,
to surprise you with something insane at
tops
this point.
It. Like, I would say, for sheer craziness, this issue tops every issue before.
Yeah.
It is, the new Abomination is completely, I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah.
And then all the stuff that's going on. I mean, It's just, it's a horror book. It's a superhero book. It's a radioactive monster book. It's yeah, like, it's just,
it's like the best Godzilla movie. And like, it's like all these things. It's just big monsters fighting each other, but written in a way that it's not stupid.
Yeah. And it's just delivers
clever and horror and like legitimate gore and creepiness,
but also delivers on like cliffhangers too.
Delivers like, on cliffhanger, delivers on
like cliffhangers paying, that you're just like
paying
whoa.
Tribute to the 70s versions, the 80s versions of the Hulk. Like, it's written by somebody that loves the character, but also loves horror movies and also loves all. It's like somebody just jammed The Thing, John Carpenter's The Thing, and The Hulk, and like...
It's very Cronenberg-y. Just,
yeah, and like a big Gamera movie and like a bunch of other shit together, and it's awesome.
But also like by way of the entire Peter David run of Hulk as well, and stuff that happened after. And all the character redesigns, I guess. I feel like Joe Bennett, the artist, if he's the one that designing these, and I assume he is doing a great, great job.
Whoever designed the Abomination is a goddamn genius.
Yeah, should be working in movies.
Still is like one of the best creature designs I've ever seen.
Yep.
Like, ever.
Yeah, in most inventive and just... It's great. So amazing. Immortal Hulk, number 19, by Al Ewing and Joe Bennett and others. Yep.
Just not enough awesome things to say about it.
No.
Speaking of things that I don't know what to say about.
Flash.
Flash exists.
It's out. Speaking
of, did not read it.
Even though I really like it, Wonder Woman 72 is also out. I like this book. I don't like have, it's, they fight a Minotaur, you know, whatever. I like it.
Yeah. Riri Williams, Ironheart, number 7 is out. She's fighting zombies with the Wasp, or is she?
Yeah.
There's a crazy new villain
that turns people into zombies.
Yes, in a way. And so it's cool.
Yeah.
It is what it has been. It's definitely aimed at probably the 8 to 14 crowd.
Yeah.
And it's very strong for that. I feel like Marvel's marketing department is not doing a great job at explaining who needs to be reading these books.
Yeah, probably
and
not.
I also feel like the art on the cover is not showing people who needs to be reading these books. Mm. It seems like all of the Riri Williams covers have kind of looked like
Standard comics.
Right. They don't look like a teen book. Then you open it up and it's got this great teen book art in it.
Mm.
And it's...
There it is.
Yeah. I mean, the covers aren't bad. They're just not the right covers for the book that it is.
Yeah. I think both Marvel and DC need to step up their editorial game.
True. I honestly think it's their marketing game that I'm maddest at Marvel for. It's just like they aren't...
But editorial is covers too, right? Like they're the ones that are commissioning the covers and approving the covers. I mean, maybe they have a cover editor. Maybe that person needs this, but it's like that. That is true. And if that's part of marketing, then that's part of marketing. Speaking of a book that I inexplicably love for, I have no idea why, but I do. It Batman Detective Comics number 1005 is out. It is the final part of this really just off the wall, like nonsensical fight with the Arkham Knight. It's don't expect an intellectual parade of Batman stuff. Just expect Batman and Robin fighting Dr. Phosphorus and some other villains and this Arkham Knight.
Yes.
And we'll move on to the next story.
And Invaders.
Hopefully they won't talk about that for a long time. Invaders was crazy.
Invaders 6.
This book is probably much better than... I guess maybe I didn't read all of the issues. Namor is displaying some powers that I wasn't aware he had. It's a whole lot of Atlantean stuff going on, which usually is not like a huge draw for me. But it is a well-drawn and undoubtedly well-written book. It has all the, obviously the Golden Age Marvel characters in it.
Some of the stuff that they did with the Atlanteans I thought was great. There's some spy stuff that they did, which I thought was interesting, and some good heartfelt moments that were kind of like, it's a smarter book than I would expect for Invaders, but Zdarsky writing straight books has become something that I'm like, I'm confused by, but he's really good at. Like, yeah, Daredevil is wonderful.
Yes.
And it's just like, he can write non-funny books when he wants to.
Well, he's very, very smart.
He's just very funny. Like,
also
he has
very funny.
A great sense of humor, so it's odd to see him not writing funny.
Yeah, but I mean, it's versatile, you
great.
Know, in the same way that, you know, sorry, there's an ambulance.
Sorry, guys.
We're doing this directly from Deering Oaks Park this week. We're just in the middle of Deering Oaks Park.
Ooh.
That's hot. Hot mic.
Hot mic. Sorry, guys. Anyway.
Someone, someone somewhere is on fire. We're
Jeepers.
Sorry. We hope they're okay.
Hope everybody's all right.
All right. We've got a couple more books to talk about and then a trade rundown.
Yeah. The Punisher.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Brutal.
He kills a guy in the face with a knife in this issue.
It's
pretty great. Like, this guy's like, what are you going to do? There's five of us and one of you. And then, like, he just throws a knife in his face and he's like, four. It's like, you know, kind of it's been done before, but it was well played.
And there's some real good, like, just murdering massive numbers of Hydra agents.
Yeah.
With, like, you know, Predator style jungle traps. It's fun.
Yeah.
Loved it.
I am going to close it off with Albatross Funny Books. Soraya and Kendall present Mega Ghost. So I guess, it's just Mega Ghost number 5. It's just got a weird trade cover.
Yes.
Mega Ghost. I love Mega Ghost. The artist on this book is Gideon Kendall. This guy is so great.
The second coming of Jack Davis.
Yes, very, very much so. But, you know, its own style as well. Is this the one that had...
Oh, maybe this is the one that has...
That's... Oh, my God, yes.
Oh, we had the wrong book.
Moss Squatch is not in Gogor, but is, in fact, in Megaghost.
Oh,
and here it is,
for
right
corn's
here.
Sake.
Moss Squatch, the horticultural horror of the swamps. and he makes the sound effect... Muck. And slup and slither and slurp. This book is great if you just want a really fun, kid-friendly, ghosty, horror-y, monster-y, Frankenstein-y kind of book. It's just super great, and it has awesome, awesome, like, Mad Magazine-style art.
Yeah, reminds me of a book that would have come out from America's Best in the 90s or something. Hmm. Like, there were a bunch of those books that were just... It has kind of like a fun Tom Strong-y thing to it in some ways, and it's got some other like it's more comics that are only comics, and that's all they need to be, and they're not trying to
but
be anything else.
Also has kind of like a fun like 70s cartoon show kind of vibe where it's like, you know, thing ring, do your thing kind of stuff. I mean, literally he has a ring that when he puts the pieces together,
absolutely,
it forms these three ghosts into one mega ghost.
It's
Voltron with ghosts.
And
it's
and
so many.
Also, his adversary is basically Richie Rich.
Yeah.
You know, he's got all sorts of those sorts of fun cartoon tropes.
Yep.
It is. Yeah.
It's just a super fun, fun, fun book.
It's an 80s, I think, like 80s cartoon.
But even you could even say 40s, and you could throw like a Shazam reference in there.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a real hodgepodge smorgasbord of things that are often ignored in modern comics. I'm pulling up my phone.
Oh my God. So let's just talk about the Yo comics, I believe.
Yeah, my yeah.
Oh my God. Okay. So there's the Yo comics, JOE comics, that makes the all of the pre-code horror collections, released this amazing collection of swamp monster horror stories.
It is called Swamp Monsters.
Swamp Monsters. And it is so good.
Yeah.
It has so many ridiculous stories, like 30s, 40s, like really early stuff. Like,
it's mostly 50s, I would say. And it's
pre-code.
But like not... Like,
it's all,
you know, ice pick to the eyeball kind of stuff. Just
no,
like,
it's that
I mean,
secondary,
obviously it's
that secondary
stuff.
Company. Shit.
Oh, I don't know, but you should make your radio play reference. You should. Like,
oh,
what
yeah,
you
yeah,
were
yeah.
saying about that, because I think that is.
I think it's interesting because we were reading these and I used to listen to a ton of the horror, like radio shows from the 50s and 40s. And I swear this is a, like, there were a couple in there that I think may have either been ported to radio or ported to comic, depending on which way the time goes, because they seemed like the exact same plot. And I don't know if that's a thing that happened, but it's pretty awesome. Like, I think it was from, oh my God, The Old Hermit. Is that the series? I think, yeah. The cool. Weird figures, strange figures, that guy. Yeah. Awesome.
Yeah, it's really cool. Some of these are just like really just brilliant and fun. And like, I just had a blast just like flipping through it for like a good solid 20 minutes. My favorite story in it was called I Am a Thing. And it is,
it is a thing,
a beautiful story involving a 50-foot tall swamp man who is brutally assassinated by some unsuspecting people and leaves a heartrending farewell note in giant letters in the middle of a road.
And oh, poor giant.
Like, he literally is just like, I need help. And he just like writes it on this street in huge letters, but they just kill him anyway because he is a thing.
We're
going to kill that thing.
Why not?
And for some reason, it is inexplicably the only giant monster in the history of giant monsters who is killed by only being shot once with regular bullets.
Oh, wow.
But
anyway, still had a very small heart.
Yeah, they shot him. Yeah, it was weird. But also, there's an issue of G-Fan out, new G-Fan. With
a big, awesome poster.
Amazing poster of someone's giant Godzilla statue in the middle of their store. It's like a poster of like a picture of someone's store, which I thought was really fun. And Hulkverine's Ice Cream Man.
Ooh, Ice Cream Man 3, the trade paperback is out.
Yes. We've also got a Moonshadow Omnibus.
Yep.
Penny Nichols.
We also.
Like a murder mystery.
So we ordered a copy of the Seven Soldiers of Victory Omnibus.
I saw that behind the
for or Seven Soldiers Omnibus for a customer. Diamond said, sorry, it's out of print. We don't have it. Turns out we wound up getting the last copy that Diamond had in stock. So it is now officially out of print for everywhere. They were like, oh, we found one in the warehouse. So literally we have the last omnibus of the literally the last one in existence from Diamond.
Wow.
And it is now officially out of print. So
get it.
As of now, we are now the ones that made it out of print. So if you want it,
it's all your fault.
He went and found it elsewhere because he was like, because we told him we didn't have it. But now we have a copy. Hooray. Mm.
Yes. And I should also mention, for those people who are fresh off the high of seeing the latest X-Men film and just want to know what it's all about, there is a new printing of the Dark Phoenix Saga trade.
Yes, we got a bunch of those.
If you want to know what that story was like when it wasn't torn to shreds by a million executive producers, you should just read that trade if you haven't yet. You can get it. And there's a couple other things as well.
We got a bunch of new or a bunch of restocks on X-Men stuff. We got
nice
Avengers versus X-Men and some other stuff that we haven't had for a little while where we just kind of didn't think about it. So yeah, good X-Men stuff on the shelf right now.
Good X-Men stuff. And we may, just for our regular listeners, we may be trying a new format. Some changing up the format a little bit next week. So
trying to do something fancy. We want to gussy the place up a bit.
We want to try something maybe a little different. So we'll see how that works out. I think it will be really cool. And stay tuned next week. Same bat time, same bat channel.
Awesome. Thanks. Follow us at Actually Comics on Instagram and www.coastcitycomics.com.
Yes.
And we will see you next week. Yeah.
one wish.